20 this morning in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We are replaying some of our favorite morning show interviews of 2021 this week. And today, a heartwarming interview from June with a young man about to go off to the Olympics in Tokyo and his very proud father. And at the end of the interview, we'll update you on how things went at the Olympics for Jordan Windle. Here's that interview. Enjoy.
And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. For the second time this week, I have my brother Steve to thank for a very special morning show guest. And it's two of them actually today. And I could not be happier about this opportunity to interview Jerry Windle and Jordan Windle. Jordan Windle is on his way to the Olympics, having just triumphed, finishing second in the Olympic trials for the 10-meter platform. And for any of you who watched this on television, it was a sight to behold. One marvelous dive after another, delivered under such high-pressure circumstances. It was an incredible performance. And he and Brandon Luciano are going to represent the United States in Tokyo wonderfully well in this event. And in the stands was his father, Jerry. And we have both father and son with us, Jerry Windle and Jordan Windle, on today's morning show, 2 days before Father's Day, because the story of Jerry and Jordan is a very special father-son relationship that is worth exploring and celebrating. As a matter of fact, the two of them have created a book, or did so some time ago, called An Orphan No More, The True Story of a Boy, Chapter 1, and Jerry adopted Jordan from Cambodia, and that's the connection with my brother Steve. My brother Steve and his partner Scott adopted a boy from an orphanage in Cambodia roughly around the same time, and so Steve has been in contact with Jerry and Jordan over the years, and it was his brilliant idea, I must admit, to issue this invitation, and I'm so thrilled that both Jerry and Jordan were willing to come on the morning show and to share their wonderful story. Jerry and Jordan Windle, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you for
having
us.
Thank you so much.
Really glad that we can have you here. Before we get to the story, the heartwarming story of father and son, I do want to focus for just a moment on these high-pressure Olympic trials, which just concluded with Jordan, you earning a place in the Olympics for the 10-meter platform. First of all, I gather from the commentary that this was not your first time in the Olympic trials. Can you just kind of briefly sketch your history in terms of the Olympic trials and what this third time around meant?
Yeah, of course. So the first time I went to the Olympic trials, I was actually 13 years old. And you're supposed to be 14, but I was turning 14 the year of the Olympics, so I was allowed to compete at 13 years old. And you know, obviously at that age, I didn't have the experience or the dives capable of actually placing high enough to go to the Olympics. But it was mainly, you know, I was mainly there to compete for the experience and to get kind of used to the atmosphere in itself and competing with such a high level. And then I went, you know, four more years later again, I got a little bit closer. I ended up placing fourth, behind David Dinsmore, Steele Johnson, and David Bodaya. And, that was an extraordinary event. And, you know, I'm very thankful to be able to have the opportunity to dive against all those guys. And then, you know, following that 5 years later, you know, because of COVID pushing back the Olympics, and the trials as well, we ended up going to the Olympic trials in Indianapolis, Indiana. And, you know, I had high hopes, but I wanted to stay realistic, going into it, being smart about my body and the events that I had to compete in. I was actually, qualified in the men's individual 3 meter as well as the 10 meter. So I was doing two events there. And, you know, going into the 10 meter, I did pretty well in prelims. I placed second, following Brandon Lasciavo. And then going into semis, I remained in second with, I think, around a 70-point cushion from my place to the third place qualifier. And the, you know, from that, you know, I had a lot of momentum going into the competition, and I was very positive with how the meet was going. But, you know, the next day I had to then prepare myself for men's 3 meter individual, which not many people would recommend doing two events at an Olympic trials trying to qualify. And I could understand why, because when I actually started the event, I started to have a little bit of strain within my upper body and my triceps. And I took it upon myself to talk to my coach, Matt Scoggin. And I told him that, you know, I think it's smart to, you know, pull out of the 3 meter event and focus solely on the 10 meter, what's important. And we did so, and ended up qualifying. So it was quite the journey.
Wow. I remember you saying that when you were interviewed afterwards. So Jerry, what has it been like for you to be the proud father in the stands for all kinds of meets over the years, but in particular, three Olympic trials, and with so much riding on this last one in particular? How do you keep from just exploding from the enthusiasm?
You know, it really is hard. And it's every dive that Jordan performed at the Olympic trials, I was reliving every moment of the 15 years of him practicing 4 to 5 hours a day, 6 days, even as an elementary school student. And then I was taken back to the 2012 Olympic trials, and Greg Louganis was there, and Kent, Mary Ellen Clark, all Olympic medalists. And they pulled Jordan aside, and we actually have a picture of the three of them with Jordan. And they told Jordan when he was 13 years old, you are going to be an Olympian. You're going to be one of us. And it's just not your time yet. And they were there at this Olympic trials to celebrate with him. And it was, you know, it was a culmination of all the hard work and the sacrifices that Jordan has made throughout the years that made me so proud. You know, he gave up going to a normal brick and mortar public school. He's been on Team USA since he was 13 years old. So since the age of 12 or 13, he's been in a virtual learning academy. He didn't have homecoming. He didn't have football games. He didn't have a prom because he dedicated his life to this sport. You know, his degree is in the culture of sport at University of Texas. And he's wanting to be a coach. So diving is his life. And what made it even more special for me is this was Jordan's journey. You know, some parents are kind of the sideline parents that live vicariously through their kids. I was never one of those. I wanted to enjoy the ride. I wanted to be able to give Jordan the opportunity to be the best version of himself that he could be. And he took that opportunity. I supported him all along the way. And for to see that pay off, I think is a testament to not only his tenacity and his stick-to-itiveness, but also to this idea that any parent who gives their child or a community that gives a child an opportunity, you don't know the magic that can happen if that child has has the fortitude and resilience and tenacity to make it happen. And that's what I saw in Jordan. And I think that's what so many people saw in him. And that is what makes me so proud. I love that he's going to the Olympics. I love that he will forever be an Olympian. But more than that, I'm so proud of the human being that he is and the citizen, not only a United States citizen, but a global citizen. And to me, that's what really makes me so proud of the young man he's become.
Jordan, your performance in these Olympic trials was highlighted by an amazing dive in the very first round in which you scored 5 out of 7 perfect tens. First of all, in your competition history at this level, I mean, in terms of this level of competition, had you ever done that before? Or was that, in a sense, the summit of what you've thus far achieved as a diver?
I have scored perfect tens before. I don't want to come off cocky, and I'm sorry if it does. It's not meant to, but you know, during my collegiate career, being able to perform, you know, next to people that are Olympians and have similar goals like me to reach the Olympics, to win an NCAA championship, you know, you want to perform at the highest level possible and also show that, you know, you can stand next to these guys and, you know, and these guys are my family. So I want to make everyone proud, including my dad, my family, and my teammates. And that's just how I've always been throughout my whole diving career. And, you know, when I'm having fun and I'm feeling good during a competition, healthy and a good mindset, a lot of positive things can come out from that. So,
yeah. I remember one of the commentators during this telecast, it was towards the very end when the results were very clear and that you and Brandon Lociavo were going to be the two representatives for the United States in the 10 meter platform. And there are all kinds of hugs and lots of tears at poolside. And one of the commentators said, this is a family. And of course, not just you and specifically your college teammates, but all of you from competing schools, all of you who maybe don't even otherwise know each other all that well. Jordan, can you just expound a little on that sense of family, of community amongst divers who are also fierce competitors with one another? Help us understand what that's like.
Yeah, of course. And I think, you know, coming into the sport and why I love this sport so much. Now, in my opinion, when you're not relating it to the Olympics, if we're just talking about diving just in general, it's somewhat of a small sport, but we're a very tightly netted group and, you know, everyone knows each other and we all support each other, even in competition. And when, you know, you could consider one another rivals, we still want each other to do well. And I think what makes me love this sport so much and love everyone that I'm able to compete against is we want to beat each other at our best. You know, we want everyone to be healthy. We want everyone to be at 100% competing at the best so that, you know, no matter what, whoever's the best on that day, they take the top. And, you know, in the video that you saw with the commentary and with all the tears, I mean, there was just so much love in the air and the atmosphere. There was so much positivity. I mean, obviously, you know, two people are only allowed to compete for the U.S., but, you know, it's such a family-based atmosphere that no matter who goes, you know, we all look out for each other and we're all very grateful for the outcome.
Super. Yeah. I want to ask you about...
No, I was just going to say really quickly that one of the highlights for me was Jordan and Dave have been competing since they were 8 years old. They've known each other at almost every meet since 8 years old, and you know, being genuine friends. As much of a letdown it was for David, he was just as extremely happy for Jordan. And that's that sense of family and community that even though it wasn't your day that day, not to be angry with the person that stepped up because everybody was diving at their best, but to celebrate their friend who has achieved a goal. And that to me is just, it's something that you can't put a price tag on. It's a beautiful thing.
Right. You're referring to third place finisher David Dinsmore. And I'm so glad that you acknowledge that. And it means a lot coming from you. I mean, the father of Jordan, who is going to the Olympics, to acknowledge the grace of David Dinsmore in what was, of course, a moment of, for him, disappointment, but very happy for Jordan. And Jordan, I wanted you to say a word about the young man who came in fourth, who was 14 years old, Joshua Hedberg. And of course, you've been in the trials as a 13-year-old, so you know something about what it's like to be a little kid head-to-head with all of these strapping young adults and holding your own. I just wonder if you have any brief impressions you want to share about this young 14-year-old and what might be ahead for him.
Yeah, I mean, Josh is an extraordinary diver. And at such a young age, he's excelling way faster than, you know, even myself. And I can say that with full confidence. He is better at his age than I was at his age. And it's amazing because he holds himself so well. He's very confident, very clear-minded when he's competing. And, you know, when he's diving, it's almost as if he's a 20-year-old. Like, he's diving at the highest level, even though he's a young teenager. And he's very well spoken. And, you know, for the future to come, I mean, it's going to be endless for him. And I'm not looking forward to competing against him when he reaches his peak.
Understood. One last question about the community of divers, and then I want to delve into the father-son story. Jerry, as someone in the stands, we mostly got to see you as you were cheering ferociously for your son, for whom you are so incredibly proud and love so much. I'm just curious, are you one of those fathers who sits in the stands stoically while other divers are diving? And do you save your applause for Jordan? I suspect the answer is no. You seem like somebody who is there to celebrate the sport and all of these fine competitors, even those that are not your son.
Yeah, you know, you see in some sports where you know, parents in the stands will maybe silently or not so silently, you know, wish mistakes on other athletes. And when you have these types of competitions, either gymnastics or ice skating or diving, these divers do things that 99.9% of the rest of us can't even dream of doing. And so the athleticism that is required and the commitment and the dedication to compete at this level, in my opinion, deserves absolute respect. You know, I think that I don't like when parents get too overly aggressively involved in their athlete's performance outside of being a spectator, because that's what I am at that time. I'm a spectator. You know, I want Jordan to be, and I've told him this, and he can confirm it. Have fun, smile, be humble, and stay healthy. And so long, I don't care where he ends up. I truly don't. As long as he has had fun and he's enjoyed the ride, because when he has children and grandchildren, I want him to be able to look back and say, remember when, and to have those really good memories. And so, you know, I was cheering for David and for Tyler and for every other competitor that was out there, because I wanted them to have fun. I wanted them to stay safe. And as Jordan said, you want everybody to compete at their best, because if you win because someone else failed, that's not as sweet a victory, you know? And when you can win on that particular day, when everybody is at their best, how amazing is that? And these kids put in, you know, thousands and thousands of hours. And I think they deserve the cheer and applause of everybody in the stand, regardless of who they may or may not be, you know, hoping is able to make the team. And, you know, I've seen, you know, David has beaten Jordan. Jordan has beaten David. It's whoever is best on that day in these kind of sports. You know, it's not running down a track and who crosses the line first. Diving is a very subjective sport. There are certainly objective criteria, but, you know, that piece is so important. And, you know, Greg Louganis told us from very early on, I think he met Jordan when he was 7 or 8 years old, and he's been a mentor of his ever since. And the one thing that he always told Jordan was, no matter what, stay humble and have fun. because if you're not having fun, it's not worth it. And that's why I never wanted to put myself in the position of driving Jordan to do his sport. If he wanted to do it, I was going to be there to support it, irrespective of whatever sacrifice that would take, because this is his moment in life. And I want him to have these memories forever. So it's a family.
Wise words. For those of you just joining us, we are speaking today with an extraordinary father-son, Jerry Windle, Jordan Windle. Jordan Windle is on his way to the Tokyo Olympic Games. He will be representing the United States in the 10-meter platform men's diving competition. We are having this conversation a couple of days before Father's Day, and it is time for us to explore something even more personal in terms of their own story. Jerry Windle adopted Jordan from a Cambodian orphanage right around the time that my brother Steve and his partner adopted their son Henry from, I believe, a different orphanage in Cambodia, if I'm not mistaken, but it was right around the same time. Jerry, can you just tell us what was going on in your life at the time that sort of galvanized you to want to do this?
You know, the idea of being a father was something that has been with me from my teenage years. I always dreamed about being a dad, but I also knew I was different from most other guys. You know, I was gay. I wasn't out, but I knew that I was gay, and I knew that I wouldn't be getting married and having children. And when I left the military, I was in a financial position that, you know, I would be able to go through a process of adoption and I'd be able to provide a home for a child. And I happened to be working in pharmaceuticals at the time. And I was waiting on a physician to have a conversation with him. And I picked up a magazine in his office, and it told a story about a young boy named Michael and his father bringing him home from a Cambodian orphanage. And it didn't mention a mom. And the story, it kept going on about how his friends were saying the relationship between his father and son was so incredibly strong. And I called the number at the bottom of the article and I said, hey, is it possible for a single person to adopt from Cambodia? And they said, well, yes, it is. And I said, can you send me a packet of information? So while waiting on one of my customers in a doctor's office, I was arranging for a dossier of information to come my way. And I received it the following week and started the paperwork instantaneously. And 5 months later, I was traveling to Cambodia to bring Jordan home.
I know in the case of my brother Steve, there was a painfully long delay, a kind of a hiatus in the process when things were kind of shut down for, I'm not even sure, or I don't remember now what the reasons were. And they knew they had a boy waiting for them in an orphanage in Cambodia. I mean, they'd even seen his face, I think. And so the wait was excruciating. And of course, eventually everything worked out well. It sounds like for you, it must have happened just before that pause occurred. And so it was a relatively quick process.
They told me it was going to be a year long process. And I too had a picture of Jordan, and his Cambodian name was Pisai. The nannies at the orphanage named him Pisai. And it translates to little darling in English. And so they sent me a picture and they said, we've identified this boy. We believe he would be the absolute perfect son for you. But it was going to be about a year long wait. And so, about 5 months into the process, into the wait, I had sent over a picture of myself on a keychain for them to give to Jordan and let him know that his daddy was waiting for him. But I got a phone call from the, agency. And they said that the government was on the verge of shutting adoptions down out of Cambodia. If you could go, you have to go this week. So I literally dropped everything that I was doing. I was playing a leading role in the man in Naples, Florida. And the week of technical rehearsals, I had to tell my director that I was going without an understudy to Cambodia to bring home a little boy. Because if I hadn't, there would have been a possibility that I never would have been able to bring him home. So I think Steve happened right after me when that delay was taking place, because it was going back and forth with adoptions out of Cambodia.
Well, I'm glad that you got to avoid that painful delay and that all of this worked out so well.
Absolutely.
Do we know much about Jordan's background in terms of how it was he ended up at this orphanage, or is that, in a sense, shrouded in mystery?
You know, there really is a lot of mystery around it. I was told that, so he was at an orphanage in Chum Chow, the Women's and Children's Center in Chum Chow. It's now closed. I was told that his parents were sick and one had passed away. We believe that both of his birth parents had died. At the time, the only way that children could be in orphanages in Cambodia was if they had no living relatives. So what I was told is that he was in a basket placed outside the orphanage gates, and they brought him in into the orphanage. And he was about a year old when he was brought into the orphanage. And I adopted him when he was 18 months old. So he spent about eight and a half months or so, they say, in the orphanage before I was able to go to Cambodia to bring him home.
Wow, what a moment. Jordan, do you recall the moment that your father first told you that you were adopted, or told you anything about your own story? Or do you feel like, in a sense, you've like sort of kind of almost always known?
Oh gosh, I can't really remember, but I think for the most part, I sort of always knew. I think there was a phase in my life though where I just went through life when I was young, but I went through, elementary school and stuff, and I just assumed that nothing was wrong. I just had a father. I didn't think anything much that I didn't have a mother. I just knew I had a parent that loved me. It was just so normal that, there was nothing wrong, with how things were going on with my life. But I think when I started to sort of realize, my family was different, I was different, was when, other kids and other people would start to, ask me, where's my mom? Or if I would notice how there are other parents walking with their kid and it's a mom and a dad. And I've always just had, my dad with me. Keep in mind that I never once questioned it. I love my dad and I would never change my family for anything in the world. But, questions in my head, I'd have to go to my dad and I'd ask him about it. And, people would ask me why my dad's white, why am I brown? And, then obviously my dad would have to talk to me and explain to me that, I was from Cambodia. And then if he wants to, he can tell you the funny story about me wanting to turn white, but I'm not going to tell you that one. He could do it. That's a little bit of like the sort of phase that I went through, and it was difficult just because I didn't have answers for people. I was just so young. I didn't know what to tell everyone. And I just kind of went along and, I was happy as it was. So
it was your normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerry, do you want to tell that story?
Oh my God, I would love to. So it was, it really was. It was in kindergarten, and I've always been sort of like the room father and the PTA president and all that kind of stuff. And again, to me, I think Jordan looks just like me. So, kids were asking, why is he brown and I'm white. So he came in kindergarten and he came home and he was really upset. And he said, Daddy, why am I brown and you're white? And I'd always told him, his adoption story. And I never kept secrets from Jordan about anything, but he was just really upset. And he goes, well, I want to be white like you. And I said, well, honey, do you know how much money people that are my color spend in tanning beds and how we risk ourselves getting skin cancer trying to get brown like you? We spend our entire lives and half of our incomes trying to get brown in tanning beds or in spray tan salons. And he's like, really? I said, yeah, that's all we ever do. But we were living in Miami, Florida at the time. And even I, having a child who had, brown skin, we would go to the beach a lot and go to the pool in our condo. And I was cooking dinner one night and he was yelling at me from his bedroom. And I thought he had gotten into his bathtub and gotten into hot water or something. He's like, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. And I ran into the bathroom. And this is a story that I'll tell at his wedding too. But he was 4 years old, and at 4 years old, he was probably maybe 60 pounds, maybe 40 pounds. He was very small forever. And he was bent over backward looking at himself in the mirror on the vanity. And he saw that his little butt was lighter than the rest because he had gotten tan. And so the rest of his body got a tan and his bottom didn't. And he goes, look, daddy, I'm turning white. And so I had to explain, no, even though you're brown, you can still get a tan. But I thought that was just always really cute. But, you know, from then on, when we, you know, he could talk very proudly about, you know, being Cambodian. And that's kind of when the stories of the Prince of Cambodia came about, bedtime stories that I would just create to talk to him about the amazing adventures of the Prince of Cambodia. And we talked about his mom and that he did have a mother, and that, you know, my mom had passed away, and I shared with him that, you know, his mom was probably in heaven and the two of them are, you know, looking down on us. And if he looks really, you know, closely in the mirror, or looks in his reflection in the water, he could probably see his mother's eyes looking back at him, because it was always important for me to know that he did have a birth mother and he had a birth father. And, you know, I was his daddy, but he had two, you know, wonderful human beings who brought him into this world. And to the same degree, you know, we've always celebrated the fact that first and foremost, he's a child of Cambodia. You know, he was born in Cambodia and he needs to be absolutely proud of that heritage. And he is an American citizen. But, you know, as Jordan will tell you, he dives not only for the United States, but he dives for the people of Cambodia as well. And I think that is a beautiful thing. And I think it's something that, you know, needs to be celebrated rather than, you know, looked down upon or to think anything less of, because he wants to dive for the people of Cambodia as well and make them proud.
And it was mentioned in the telecast, Jordan, that you've been back to Cambodia for a diving exhibition, trying to get the people of Cambodia to be excited about diving and to perhaps offer up opportunities for other talented youngsters there to enter the sport. The other thing I want to ask you about, Jordan, is not only the white brown thing, but also the fact that your father, Jerry, is a gay man. And I wonder, over the course of your childhood, if that was ever an issue in terms of your peers, or even an issue between the two of you. Was that ever something that, in a sense, complicated your relationship? Or was that just one more thing about your dad that you not only accepted, but loved?
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, you know, having my dad, he's my dad. That's all there is to it. You know, no matter what there is about him, that's never going to change. And, you know, family, that means that it's endless love. And I feel like a lot of families need to understand that. And a lot of people that, you know, question the, you know, families that are different need to understand that as well. I think there weren't a lot. I wouldn't say I went through a super tough time with my dad being gay throughout my life. There were moments that, you know, there were some standstills with it. And, you know, I won't go into a lot of detail or say any names, but it made some things a little difficult. But over time, and as I grew up and as everyone matured, things started to balance out. And, you know, people were more aware that, you know, we're all human, and, you know, love is love. And that's what's going to make this world go round, is the fact that we just accept each other for who we are. And that's just what my dad's always taught me. And it's just become normal for me to, kind of express that to everyone. And being in the diving world, everyone is welcoming of, you know, the diverse community that we have. And I think that's why I love, you know, being a diver. And it just makes it so much easier to want to be an inspiration to younger people and to want to share my story around the world.
So. Beautifully said. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Jordan Windle, who is now Olympian Jordan Windle. He will represent the United States in the 10-meter platform men's diving event in Tokyo. And also with us is his father, his proud father, Jerry Windle. Jerry, do you recall when young Jordan first began expressing interest in diving?
You know, so such a phenomenal story. And when you think of, you know, the fabric of the universe, how things get aligned. I was working at a hospital in Miami, and we were living in Fort Lauderdale. And at the end of the school year, between first and second grade, so Jordan was seven, I assumed that the school would have some kind of summer enrichment program. And I said, so what's Jordan going to be doing during the summer? And they're like, well, Mr. Wendell, we're closed. You got to. And I said, well, what do I do? And he goes, they said, well, you need to find a summer camp for him. I'm like, okay, so how do I do that? And he goes, we're 2 weeks before the end of school. You needed to do this months ago. And he said, they're all full. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to take this 7-year-old boy to the hospital with me every day. And they said, so I'm like, I was kind of in a panic because I didn't know what to do. And Jordan and I had a tandem bicycle, and we were riding a bike down Las Olas in Fort Lauderdale. And we made our way over to the beach, and across the street on at the Swimming and Diving Hall of Fame, there was one of those banners, and it said Fort Lauderdale Aquatics Fun Camp, you know, enrollment available. We whipped it in there fast. And I'm like, how do I sign my kid up for this? You know, I need to get a summer camp for him. And they said, yeah, we have an opening. And so, you know, they went on field trips, glass bottom boats up the New River, you know, doing tours of the Hall of Fame. And they let them jump off the diving boards one day. And I dropped Jordan off another day. And this gentleman met me at my car, and he said, hey, are you this boy's father? And I said, well, yes, I am. And he goes, would you mind parking your car? And can I talk to you for a minute? And I thought, oh no, what did he do? You know? And so I parked my car, and he called Jordan over, and this gentleman's name is Tim O'Brien. And what I later discovered was Tim O'Brien is the son of Dr. Ron O'Brien, who was Greg Louganis's Olympic coach. Right. And Tim actually competed with Greg when they were in their teenage and early 20s. And he brought Jordan over, and he said, I want to show you something. And he lifted Jordan up off the ground, and Jordan's toes pointed down instead of flexed up. And then he told Jordan, lift your eyes, arms up over your head. And he did. And he goes, look where his arms are together. And I thought, okay. And he goes, they're behind his ears. His arms are connected behind his ears. And he said, this kid has the perfect body for a diver. And he said, you know, Mr. Wendell, if you put Jordan into diving, he will be a national champion one day. Now, Jordan had a diving lesson in his life. And he goes, he's like, Daddy, I want to do it. I want to do it. And I said, are you sure you want to do diving? He goes, yeah, I want to do it. And so I signed him up for lessons. And I think within 4, maybe 5 weeks, they took him to his first dive meet. And the year after that, he won his first junior national championship. And then at 15, he won the national championship, which Tim O'Brien told me would happen. And then he won multiple championships after that. Now we're here today. So I still am in touch. In fact, Tim O'Brien just messaged me earlier, and I said, Tim, you know, I'll never forget you. You are the reason, you know, either that or because I was so discombobulated on getting him a summer school. Otherwise, maybe he'd be a Broadway actor now. I don't know. But it was a neat story of how it all came to be. And it just happened that Jordan absolutely loved the sport. And he excelled.
Jordan, I've seen some wonderful footage of you on some program on the Disney Channel, I think, where you're briefly interviewed talking about diving. And there's just this beaming smile on your face. And as you talk about it, there's just this infectious joy. And of course, I was watching that now. But I think if I had watched it then, whenever that was, I think I would have thought to myself, oh, I hope it stays that way. I hope he never loses this infectious, easy, flowing joy that he has right now about this sport. To what do you attribute the fact that you have not burned out? Just the opposite. Yeah. You have blossomed over time, and you love this sport evidently as much now as you ever did, and not just because of the success you just had in the trials, but I mean, you love diving now with all your soul. To what do you attribute that? Because of course, that's not always the way this kind of story plays out.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I wouldn't say that, you know, there wasn't a moment in my diving career where I didn't get burnt out. You know, I think with a lot of sports and being a high level competitor in general, you know, doing the same thing over and over and how it's just continuously repetitive, it's tough and it's straining on the body and the mind. But you know, surrounding yourself with amazing people and amazing team, and that's also a huge reason why I made the choice to come to the University of Texas, was because this team is so motivating and is willing to push me you know, further than I ever thought I could. And you know, I can also say that Matt Scoggin has done an amazing job at you know, coaching me the way I need to be coached. And, you know, he knows that I don't take aggressive coaching at all. You know, being with my dad, my dad's always sort of babied me a little bit throughout my life. And, you know, Matt has taken that upon himself to implement that within his coaching and to help me then, you know, soar a little bit higher. And not only that, but I enjoy diving for people's enjoyment. You know, I like getting reactions from people, kids DMing me on Instagram or Facebook, asking me for, assistance on what they can do better. And, you know, I'm studying to be a coach. My major is physical culture and sport. And, you know, that makes me just so happy when people reach out and, you know, look for assistance from me, and I can then help them reach a certain goal that they've always wanted to achieve. Cause I know that feeling of reaching goals, and it feels amazing. And I want to be a part of their life in any way, shape, or form.
Sounds like you're a real natural with all kinds of gifts for coaching. That's exciting. Jerry Windle, were you yourself an athlete? And so was this world of competitive athletics kind of a natural arena for you, or was this all something kind of new and different and relatively foreign?
Yeah, you know, I was always an athlete. I played baseball, you know, growing up, and then I went in the military at 17, and I played baseball in the Navy. I played softball with the Navy, and through college. And I was not a competitive gymnast, but I was a gymnast as well. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it. So I think that, you know, there's something about sport in general that I think brings community together, and it teaches you discipline, and it teaches you perspective. And, you know, we win and lose sometimes in our professional lives. And I think being involved in athletics, winning and losing, builds character, and it helps you to deal with really stressful times. And I think that, you know, again, with this sport, Jordan has a tremendous amount of success, but there are often times that, you know, everybody thought he was going to bring home a national title, and one, you know, little slip on a final dive, and he wound up in second place or fourth place or eighth place. And so it teaches you perspective on life. And I think that, you know, that has helped me to think about how I wanted to be able to support Jordan in his diving career. And I think that's also why, you know, I didn't want to be one of quote unquote those dads, you know, that throws a hamburger at their kid because they didn't do a good job, or text them saying, you know, you've embarrassed me. What are you doing up there? Or, you know, it's about character building, not character demolishing for me. And that's just the natural state of who I am as a human being and as a humanist. And I like that I see in Jordan and wanting to be a coach. I thought for sure he's going to want to say, okay, diving's done, I'm going to go, you know, be a real estate agent or something. But the fact that he wants to pay it forward is a beautiful thing. And I think I attribute a lot of that to Matt Scoggin as well. And also, one of Jordan's very first coaches, his name's Evan Lynette, who was a diver himself. But as a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, he would go and pick up Jordan from school every day and take him to diving practice for me because I was working. And then he would coach him there. And Jordan saw the love that Evan had for him, and Evan paid it forward, you know, and now Jordan is paying it forward. And I think that, you know, not only in diving, but so many life lessons can come out of coaching and diving. So that's another element of the pride that I have in Jordan, and something I think we can share.
Yeah. You have a lot to be proud of. Jordan, can you briefly sketch what is ahead for you now over the next few weeks before Tokyo? What is your life going to be filled with?
I mean, today was my first day back of training. I only had 3 days off, and it's going to be pretty gruesome. I have to train even more 10 meter than I have in the past because, you know, when I was focusing on 3 meter, 1 meter, and tower, I had to split up my training times so I could balance out the training. But now it's purely 10 meter, you know, going to the Olympics, want to focus and do my best to represent the U.S. as, you know, as well as possible. So we'll grind on some tower and try to stay healthy. And I'll see you in Tokyo.
I suppose that's part of the challenge, isn't it? I mean, the relentless grind, pushing yourself hard, and yet trying to figure out how hard to push yourself so you're not pushing yourself into the realm of injury. So how do you thread the needle when it comes to those kind of choices, or is that where your coach and trainers come in?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that are implemented with that, and over time and experience, I've had hundreds of injuries, and finding ways to be able to compete and do rehab and balance the time you do rehab and take time off as well is incredibly important. And I talk to a lot of physical therapists, massage therapists, and they tell me that, reading your body and listening to your body is the most important thing that you can do. And being able to come forward and tell your coach or those that are there to help you that something's wrong. And I think a lot of athletes have trouble doing that because it could be seen as a sign of weakness. But I mean, in my opinion, that's just a way to get stronger. And that's another thing that I tell a lot of young athletes is, don't be afraid to go out of your comfort zone and speak up about something that, might be hurting or aching or you're uncomfortable with, because, in the end, it's going to be worth it. And, a lot of great things are going to happen for you. So.
Fantastic. Jerry Windle, I assume you are headed to Tokyo as well. I mean, is that just a foregone conclusion, or are there hoops that have to be jumped through in order for you to be able to be there in the stands cheering on Jordan and other competitors?
So in a normal world, absolutely I would be. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19, Japan has made a ruling that there could be no foreign spectators. So only Japanese citizens will be able to actually attend the events. So we're going to be looking forward to having some big viewing parties, I guess, around the country here in the United States. And I know, our entire family is going to be watching together. And I know a lot of Jordan's friends, even from college, who were interested in going over to Tokyo to watch him dive. We're not going to be able to do that now. But I think Jordan knows that we're all going to be there with him in spirit and in heart, and we will be cheering him on from afar.
A whole lot of people are going to be cheering him on from afar, I assure you of that. And when all of this is done, this Olympic adventure, I'm crossing my fingers that maybe we can have a follow-up conversation. And I would love, in particular, in that follow-up conversation, if we're able to get that scheduled, to hear more about the book that the two of you created together called An Orphan No More, which sheds even more light on this truly beautiful father-son story. Jerry Windle and Jordan Windle, I am so deeply appreciative of you for making time for this conversation in what I'm sure is now a really extra hectic life. And Jordan, we wish you only great success and also a wonderful, deeply meaningful experience at these Tokyo Olympic Games. A lot of hearts are going with you. And thank you again for this time together.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And in case you're wondering how Jordan Windle did at the Tokyo Olympic Games, he ended up finishing ninth, America's highest finisher in the 10-meter platform event. And his father, Jerry, was cheering him all the way. I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we will continue our path of rebroadcasting some of our favorite Morning Show interviews from 2021. Tomorrow, I reconnect with author Fern Schumer Chapman. She's been my guest on a number of occasions, most recently to talk about her book called Brother, Sister, Stranger: Sibling Estrangement and the Path to Reconciliation. It's a very illuminating look at something that is all too common, estrangement between siblings, and what can be done to bring estranged siblings together. This is something in which Fern Schumer Chapman has some direct personal experience with, but her book goes beyond her own personal story to involve the expertise of all kinds of people who have explored this and studied it. That's tomorrow on The Morning Show. On Thursday, best-selling author Tim O'Brien and his wonderful book about becoming a father.